You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
6 minutes past 10. Welcome to the second hour of the Cebus Makhaza Show with me, Gugs Mhlongo. Good to be with you, and I'm with you until midday today. You would have heard in your latest eyewitness news, there seems to be some disagreement, certainly in the Limpopo opposition march. Earlier on, we heard COPE saying they will not take part in today's opposition march, saying it's because the Democratic Alliance hadn't been transparent with them. There were reports a little bit later on as well, saying the EFF there as well, saying had slammed reports made by the DA that the party will join in today's march against state capture. And I wonder if already the cracks are beginning to show in what seemed like quite a monumental, an important, an impressive show of unity by the opposition. But it appears there's some disagreements now, certainly with regards to the marches in Limpopo. And for all intents and purposes, it appears that the Democratic Alliance will be marching by themselves. It would be a great pity, actually, I think, if opposition parties don't get this right, if it were to not work so early in the game or so soon. But perhaps it's just regional, it's just in Limpopo, and the issues are contained to that particular area. But for all intents and purposes, the opposition unity is still in place. And we'll certainly see that when we eventually get to the debate of the motion of no confidence, once the proceedings in the Concord are completed. So that's one to watch as well.
702 and Cape Talk,
your number one news and talk station.
So you would have seen in the news towards the end of last week, early this week, discussions that potentially Zimbabwean entrepreneurs could soon use movable assets, specifically livestock, to secure loans from banks. And this is if a bill that's been brought before the country's parliament is passed. It's called the Movable Property Security Interest Bill. It's been brought before the lawmakers by the finance minister of Zimbabwe, Patrick Chinamasa, saying they want to make it easier for the country's informal sector to access funding from the banks. Of course, there's also quite a huge issue with a cash crunch, or an issue with cash not being available or enough for circulation. But this is not the first time, certainly on this continent, in the world, that we see movable assets, particularly livestock, being used as security. There are lots of examples around the world, including South Africa, India, the US. And so to talk about that, we're joined on the line by economist and a good friend of Night Talk, Pandi Pai. He's a researcher at Nascent Advisory and Research. Pandi, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Gugu, and good morning to the listeners.
So when we begin to talk about movable assets as security to secure loans from the bank, a lot of people are saying, well, surely this is a bad thing when an economy begins to have to, some people are saying it's going back to the dark ages, so where we'd come from, where we used, you know, livestock to secure funding. But this is a practice that's been in place for a while and quite widespread.
Yeah, sure. Look, I think it is quite rightly so, something that has been done before. I mean, we do it also when we buy cars, that, you know, when you go and buy a car at the bank will give you money to buy a car, and you go and you collect the car, and then they say that the car is security for the loan, so that if you don't pay back the loan, then they can take the car. There are obviously some important provisions to that, because you will have to obviously that, you know, the bank has effective ownership of the car until such time as you are done paying it, and you have situations where, for example, you must insure the car, so that if you crash the car, then there will be a payout to the bank, so that actually they're not left without security. And this is a particularly important thing, especially around livestock, is that when you say you are using something as collateral or security, the person whose security it is has to have access to it, and that access has to be secured, and this asset itself has to be secured. And with livestock, it's a pretty difficult thing to do, given, of course, that, you know, livestock could get stolen if you don't secure it, you don't insure it, or it could die, it could get sick, and all sorts of moving parts that make it a particularly difficult piece of security. And that's probably one of the biggest challenges that this kind of proposal actually bears.
In South Africa, we know farmers are able to use their cattle as collateral. So you then pledge it to secure a loan or other credit, and some of the big banks in the country allow this. We know Standard Bank does, we know Absa does. And a lot of people saying, but I mean, how does that work? At least with a car, you can almost secure it. The likelihood of a car being destroyed it can happen, but it's slightly smaller than, say, with livestock, which is they're vulnerable to disease, they're vulnerable to the elements. How do you then secure yourself? You're talking about you can secure with a car, and if you don't pay me, I can take it back. But then how do I ensure that if there's a movable asset like livestock, how do I secure that?
Yeah, and with cars also, I mean, you'll notice that, of course, cars have security numbers and all of that so that you could actually identify it easily and make sure that that is the particular car, so the registration or the VIN number and all these things. So you can say, the bank can say, well, actually, this is this car because it's a white Toyota Baki and it has this number and that. With cattle, obviously, slightly difficult. Cattle tend to look the same, so you have to mark it and say, you know, like with the particular mark and that it has to be kept at a certain place. And how do you check on it regularly if the person were to default, to be able to do that? And so the system has to be sophisticated. And what you find, many institutions will say they don't actually deal in agriculture for these reasons. They say, well, people will use the institutions will use the term, we don't understand it.
Mm.
Because part of it is to actually have a thorough understanding of it. There are also valuation issues. So if I give you 100,000 and you say, well, it's 10 cows, that each cow actually will be valued, for example, at 8,000 rand, so that you know that the value of that particular car. The independence of the valuations tends to be an issue as well, because if it's not as big or it's thin, it might not be. And we know with cars it's slightly different, because you know there tends to be independent valuations of cars. Sort of, if a car has 250,000 kilometers, is 5 years old, and they will say this condition, that it should be valued at 50,000. This cattle, it's slightly different, and you'll see tend to be also sold at auctions and things like that. So it's a particularly different thing that it requires institutions that have very specialized service, that have people, experts, who are able to conduct that work and do it in a sophisticated manner. And then, of course, it requires trust, right? Mm. That if you actually say, you know, I'm holding this security, because the person continues to rear the cattle, continues to make sure that they are in good health and good condition, and as I said, provide the kind of insurance that should there be a hailstorm or a sickness, that there's availability of the money and it's seeded in the right manner. So it's a very, very difficult practice that actually, and I think in many ways could, and I think this is part of the problem in the agricultural sector, is the cost of doing that business. Because then, whereas I may be able to actually provide the security, the cost of actually providing that security is also becomes an impediment. So, you know, insurance policies, for example, if you are saying, well, I'm a cash-strapped entrepreneur, I need money, I need to be able to run my business, and at the same time I have to run all these other costs that are required to keep security valuable and useful, tends to also be an issue. And I think a lot of farmers will say, for example, that, you know, if you go and borrow money for crops, to plant crops, then you have to then go and buy insurance for those crops, because if there's a hailstorm and the money that then doesn't come because you didn't deliver the crop to the market and make the money, then you actually need to still be able to pay it, so you take insurance. Insurance is not particularly cheap, and therefore it becomes an impediment. So the proposal itself is interesting, and then one that is important, given that we actually have a huge problem in terms of collateral and people not being able to access funding because they don't have collateral. It's a thing that many people talk about when we discuss this so-called radical economic transformation, that people have no access to finance because they don't have money. It's the same thing we discussed in education, that many people don't have access to student loans because they can't give security for those student loans, so they end up not being able to access it. But to provide access security, you know, to provide just an asset is not enough, because the asset has to be secured in the, you know, very sophisticated and difficult conditions under which that's all works can be exclusionary as well. So now you have to set up the infrastructure that allows that sort of thing to happen, the kind of market that has allowed that to happen. And I think Zimbabwe, given the market conditions there, will also face this kind of thing, where you have to actually now make sure that there's a market, there are insurers, there are people who are interested in these, are valuers, all of these people that have to participate in that market. So it might be a positive thing, because we create a market, a new market, we create a new kind of enterprise, but at the same time, it comes at certain costs. And so the people who actually needed this thing may still end up being excluded, given, of course, the cost of such an exercise.
Joined on the line by economist from Nascent Advisory and Research, Kondi Pai, speaking about banks using movable assets, specifically livestock, to secure loans. This is on the back of a bill that's being looked to be passed in Zimbabwe that would allow the informal sector to access credit through their movable property, and some of which would include livestock. And we've seen it being used in other parts of the world. And a question is, well, you know, should we be looking at this or encouraging this, particularly if we want to grow the informal sector or to allow people who in the current system can't get credit? Should we allow and encourage this for people to use? But if not, what are the alternatives? Certainly to cash. There are lots of questions about, at some point, do we de-cash the economy? Do we look at alternatives of buying goods and services to cash? 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Your SMS is on 31702 and 31567.
SMS us on 31702 or 31567.
20 minutes after 10, welcome back to the CBS Makaza Show with me, Gugs Mhlongo. We're still joined on the line by economist Kondi Pai discussing the use of movable assets, particularly livestock today, as collateral to secure loans from banks. There are some banks, we know of two in South Africa, that allow farmers to use their cattle as collateral. And looking at, well, should we expand this and make it available to other people as well as their option to access credit? What are the options in an economy, certainly like ours, where many people don't have collateral, but they might have some movable assets? 011-883-0702, 021-446-0567. Ray on SMS saying the point is loans are secured using cattle crops all over the world. That's why our banks accept it as security. Another person saying cars get insured against damage and theft. Livestock not and can never really be security against a loan. And someone else on Twitter also raising the issue of, so this is a particularly tricky one, what happens if livestock dies, if there's drought and disease? So Kondi, the issue of someone saying it can never really be a form of collateral because of how, I guess, vulnerable it is or perishable it is, it can't ever count as collateral. Is that a correct assessment?
It isn't entirely correct assessment. I think one of the important things, of course, that, you know, we're discussing here sort of making the informal sector, you know, more workable, which means actually then you have to formalize it in a way. So that actually you wouldn't be in the informal sector anymore. So that if you've got cattle and you are sort of, you know, you are, or you have livestock that you are raising or you are keeping, that you've got to now find ways that are more formal in terms of actually being able to provide that is security into the formal sector, such as the banking sector. So certificates of value of the house, so somebody must come and value your house, but maybe they might have to be taken away from you so that they are secured and maybe taken into an enclosure where they can be kept as security for the, as we know, for example, if we do houses, you know, your deed, the property deed is given to somebody else. And these kinds of things. So it might be that you need a lot more interaction to be able to actually do that. So and all sort of transaction costs. And people then will come back and say, well, here is another opportunity again for the formal sector or the big corporations to profit even more from the informal sector, from the poor. So it might even face those challenges. But it is something that can be done, certainly. As I say, it requires some expertise. I think the banks that have done it here are those banks that are traditionally have been able to support that sector over a long period of time. Mm. Even the insurance companies that will participate in it are insurance companies that have been in that sector for a very long time. So they understand it. They've got specialists. They have people that have well-trained and raised in this kind of environment that understand it much, much better. They understand the trade itself. So you would need that kind of infrastructure. So it's something that can be done. I think all of these impediments can be met. What the problem is, I think, a challenge is the cost at which you actually then fill in the gaps, such as, of course, you know, the vulnerability of a of livestock, and therefore being sure that you secure it properly. They are healthy, they are secured, they are insured, and they are kept for safety. So we know in many areas there will be a lot of theft. of livestock, so you must to make sure that the livestock, and it must be marked properly, that that's the property that has been ceded as security and those kinds of things. So it takes a lot to be able to do something like that, but it is a particularly important thing given that these may be the only assets that many people have. If you go to the rural areas, you'll know obviously that many people represent their wealth in livestock. And so in a way, this is, should be allowed to be a way for them to enter markets, to participate economically through the assets that they know that they have inherited or the assets that they better understand. But again, as I say, it takes actually the creation of markets. We can't say that's a bad thing either, because then it might open more opportunities for business, more opportunities for other people to participate in the markets as traders, as valuers, as all sorts of things that perhaps we need as we create employment. And I think much of the debate should be really around how do we open the markets? How do we make sure that people can participate? And I think this is one way to do that. But how do we then get around all the impediments? And I think the role of the state many times is actually to make sure that we have the infrastructure and the base on which people can do this. So, for example, the policy framework that the Zimbabweans are developing is important, but then you need to follow that up with very stringent and strong kinds of support to make sure that this is something that can be successful, given the clear need for it.
Lindy on 31702 saying it's already happening in a modern sense in the suburbs, garden harvest shop. You have lemons, I have tomatoes, we swap. It comes from an old English tradition. Someone saying security by means of movable property, saying is not the law. The problem is the simple fact that cows can die is just not a good form of collateral, unlike a house. And of course, there are vulnerabilities, and it's not to say that this one needs to replace the other, but the question is about where people only have this kind of asset, like livestock, should it be more accessible to them that they're able to use it as collateral if they need to? So not replacing other forms, but saying, how do we encourage the forms that some people have, particularly poorer people, if that's the kind of collateral they have? Louise and Fishhook, good morning.
That's quite an interesting discussion. I just want to say that if there's a bill before Parliament that deals with this kind of thing, I hope that bill suggests that the land bank in South Africa, which serves commercial and small, emerging farmers, I hope it suggests that the land bank is the first banking institution that should tackle this, because it is, a government, semi-government institution.
Mm.
But otherwise, I just feel, why not let the land bank go and tackle this idea, because we have to develop our economy and the informal sector.
Mm.
All I wanted to say.
Thank you very much for that, Louise. Glandi, the idea of alternatives. So, I mean, we're seeing more and more conversations about alternatives to cash. And there's a whole, there's a lot being spoken about, being written about, kind of decashing the economy and moving towards, again, alternatives. Often, again, things like land, livestock, other movable assets are mentioned as a potential. But what is the possibility of a decashed economy? Not just here, but a global one. Is that realistic?
I think it's interesting in the sense that the reason we got to cash was because we were trying to resolve the particular problem that we seem to now going back for. So we remember that, people used to use butter and all of that. And then we realized, actually, maybe we need something much more reliable, something that's much more trustworthy. And then we said, maybe we need to use gold as reserves, and then cash will be backed up by gold and then all of these things. And we were trying very much to solve a problem about how do we actually conduct a working economy. And we were trying to modernize, and we're trying to simplify things. Mm. And it seemed that, getting into cash would get us that kind of solution. So now that we have cash, we want to decash the economy because we're finding different kinds of challenges. So the question really is that, as far as I can see, how do we actually continue to solve the problems that we are facing? Again, allowing people to participate, allowing people to exchange, to be active economic agents. And we don't have to have one way of doing things, I think. If we've learned anything in the modern society and really in modern financial markets, is that it's about creating solutions that are specific to the needs of different kinds of stakeholders in the economy. You know, insurance products are developed in different areas at different times for different kinds of problems, cash and cards, and, you know, now that we use our cards and we tap them, or sometimes we go into markets where we're having, we use our cell phones. We know in Kenya they've developed all these things about M-Pesa and how people transfer cash to one another. So it's about meeting the needs at a particular time. So I wouldn't say that we did cash the economy, but we find solutions that are very specific to the challenges that people are facing, in a sense where, as we say now, that, you know, people have certain assets and those assets have not been as valuable or seem to be valuable in terms of them trying to participate, and that now we need to find better ways of valuing that. The lead is taken, for example, about the lead being used by, taken by the land bank. I think that's a particularly important thing because I suppose, as I said, you know, these things come with costs. How does government, how does the land bank itself participate? How would we find institutions that are able, some of the agricultural institutions that are out there funded by government to come out, you know, researchers to come out and say, look, we will find solutions. We will help create this market and open access to the formal economy, to those traditionally poor people, even though they are actually wealthy through through livestock, that they too can actually participate. They are not actually on the periphery of the economy, that, you know, there's a second economy thing. And really, it is about actually everybody participating. I think we tend to judge solutions too quickly as laughable or ridiculous. But I think the point is that we actually need to open the space for everyone to get in. And the private sector, of course, will always see the opportunity if the you know, the regulatory environment is right, to participate, but also government has a role to play, of course, in making sure that the bases are well provided for so that we can all move forward. But I think the de-cashing of the economy is probably one solution, but it's doubtful that it's something that we can do immediately, or that it actually may be the entire solution.
Thank you very much. That's Kanti Pai, economist at Nascent Advisory and Research. Thank you very much for your time, Kanti.
It's been my pleasure.